All right. Good morning, everybody. Good morning, all you magnificent melon heads of the world. Happy Thursday, everybody. Today is February 19th, 2026. And for many points of view today, it kind of feels like nature is healing a little bit. In many regards, we got a lot of stories out there that will probably surprise nobody. And a couple of other stories that you're like, yeah, finally, what the hell took you so long? Let's start from the top and you know, let's start with the primarily financial ones. Carvana, big one. The stock got absolutely killed yesterday after reporting earnings. And initially, a lot of people were like, hey, what's going on here? I mean, their car sales up 43% year over year. Those revenue numbers at Carvana are fantastic. Net income of $951 million. That looked pretty good. You know, if you stop reading there, everything is great. But you know what? I've been warning you guys about this company, haven't I? About Carvana for years, actually. But more so recently, ever since I saw that short report from Gotham City Research and also the short report, I got to give credit to Hindenburg Research. All the way back in 2023, they flagged this one. This company is not quite above board. Let's just put it this way. Now, if you look at their earnings, first of all, you take away the tax benefits and their earnings, like two-thirds of them just go up in smoke. Two-thirds of their net income was all deferred tax assets, an accounting maneuver, not real. What's left, 90% of that, almost all of it, was car sales. Or not car sales, was loan sales. In other words, it was not car sales. In other words, most of Carvana's profit doesn't come from selling cars. They made very little profit selling cars. It was like barely a rounding error. Most of their profit comes from selling loans, which if you look at the incentive structure and the famous quote, you show me the incentive, I'll show you the outcome. Carvana needs, for their business to succeed, they need to keep the loans flowing. It's not about how much money they get for the car. It's not about whether people ever pay them back for the money they borrow. It's how many loans can they originate and then sell to somebody else. Which means as the consumer has pulled back, Carvana shoppers have gotten less and less solvent, more and more risky. But again, Carvana's incentive structure is such that as long as they keep the loans flowing, they'll be fine. And so what I think you're going to find when the dust settles from this story is that Carvana has been making increasingly risky loans and then doing some very shady, if not outright illegal things to hide those shady loans, like using related parties, Drive Time, and Bridgecrest to hide just how many people aren't paying them back. I think when you'll find that the dust settles from that, Carvana's going to have a hard time selling their loans because people are going to realize they're garbage, in which case this company is just a mirage. It's an illusion. Take away loan sales. Take away tax benefits. This company makes no freaking money, and it just can't happen soon enough. And we got a very similar story from Klarna, the buy now, pay later provider. They reported earnings. That stock is getting demolished ahead of the opening bell as well. Revenue up 38% year over year. The top line looks great. What's going on at Klarna? Oh, they lost $16 million. How do you grow revenue 38% but still manage to lose money? Loan loss provisions is the big culprit there with Klarna. They were $250 million. Is that a lot? Yeah, that is a lot for a company like Klarna. Matter of fact, that's up 59% year over year. Now, there was a story going around late last winter. It was going viral on Reddit and TikTok, the Klarna glitch. I don't know if any of you guys heard about this story. We haven't covered it. It did come across my radar. There was this viral trend of these dirtbags going into Best Buy, starting Klarna accounts in other people's names, buying as many PlayStation 5s and iPhones as they could possibly get their hands on, and then filming themselves committing credit card fraud, basically. And this wasn't just like one or two guys, though. There were people selling courses on how to commit credit card fraud using Klarna. And then all of a sudden, late last fall and ahead of Christmas, a lot of like Best Buy employees and Costco employees, these people start posting on Reddit like, hey, any of you guys notice people coming into the store and buying like 10 iPhones? Or buying four or five PlayStations, all paying in Klarna. This is so obviously fraud. Klarna basically put out a wishy-washy statement that says, oh, fraud is illegal. Don't do fraud. In other words, we're not going to do a damn thing to stop it. And then miraculously, a few months later, they post a big increase in loan loss provisions. You think maybe these two things just might be related? Maybe. Check out the videos about Klarna glitch. My God, fraud is just so blatant that people are actually filming themselves doing it and selling courses for just $350. You too could be a fraud following my 10 easy steps. Oh my God, what the hell is the world coming to? But wait, there's more this morning. Blue Owl Capital, all right? And Blue Owl Capital is the poster child for private credit and for just the outright Ponzi nature of it. Yesterday, the story broke that Blue Owl Capital had sold $1.4 billion worth of loans. And everybody was like, see, private credit is good. They sold these loans at 98.5% of par, which means they didn't even get face value for the loans. That's important. But Blue Owl was like holding this up like, see, our marks are accurate. And then just a few hours later, the story breaks that Blue Owl Capital has permanently halted withdrawals or redemptions from their OBDC to private credit fund, their business development company. That's the fund that was specifically marketed to retail investors. They saw big surges in withdrawals late last year. More people wanted their money back. Why? Because they knew this fund was garbage, especially when they tried to merge it with their other fund, taking a 20% haircut in the process because the fund was trading at such a big discount to net asset value. In other words, their marks are BS. And now they're saying you can never have your money back if you're in this fund. Oh, that's cool. Yeah, sorry. What is a Ponzi by any other name? Yep, no, we're going to return capital to our investors via distributions. You'll get a share of the profits from these loans that are garbage. But if you want your money back, you are SOL. Now, look, they're like, yeah, we sold $1.4 billion worth of loans and we got almost face value for them. Tell me about the loans you didn't sell. What are those worth? That's interesting. Did you sell the cream of the crop? Did you sell the fresh apples at the top, leaving all the slop and the filth underneath for everybody else? And then you told everybody else, sorry, you're now stuck in the barrel with this rotting fruit. Blue Owl Capital, keep in mind, that is the company that is currently helping Meta raise their $30 billion for data centers using off-balance sheet, aka Enron-like financing arrangements, so that the auditors don't see it and so that quarterly earnings reports don't reflect all the bad debt that they're taking out using shell companies to hold it. Yep, that's the same Blue Owl Capital, poster child for private credit. And speaking of that data center financing, OpenAI is supposedly near completion of up to $100 billion of funding round at a valuation that may exceed $850 billion. A whole lot of like wishy-washy maybe qualifiers in this Bloomberg article about the magnificent $100 billion capital raise from OpenAI. Hey, just yesterday, we were talking about how Sam Altman came back empty-handed from the Middle East. Now he's got $100 billion? No, he doesn't. He may be near completion of up to $100 billion, but he didn't get it in the Middle East. And then again, you'll never hear them admit that. Nope, we've got the. Tell me if you've heard this one before. Those contributing to this funding round include possibly NVIDIA, Microsoft, Amazon, and SoftBank. NVIDIA giving money to their customers so they can buy their chips. Microsoft and Amazon almost certainly paying with data center credits. And then when they're redeemed, Microsoft and Amazon will report them as earnings or as revenue. And of course, SoftBank. How the hell is SoftBank going to pay for this? They just sold everything they could possibly sell to raise the $30 billion for the last funding round. Where are they going to get the money? And remember, we've heard this too. Remember, NVIDIA was going to invest up to $100 billion in OpenAI. And then Sam Altman was like, I never said that. Yeah, you know, not Sam Altman. It was Jensen Huang. Jensen Huang was like, I never said $1 billion. I said we were committed to up to possibly maybe $100 billion. So again, a lot of empty platitudes, empty promises from big tech. Now, here's the thing. $100 billion going to OpenAI, if it were real, should be sending AI and hyperscaler stocks sharply higher this morning. But none of them are moving. Most of them are actually down. It's almost like the market is finally seeing through this bullshit. Well, that only took you 3 years. What else we got this morning? We got Walmart earnings. Comps up 4.6%, looking pretty good. gaining market share, notably among upper income consumers. We've seen this for a while. The consumers are tapped by years of inflation and stagnant wage growth, and rich people are shopping at Walmart. And that is not a sign of prosperity for the economy. We also got some hidden inflation in those Walmart earnings, possibly the result of tariffs. And we've got our balance of trade data just came out. The trade deficit got a little bit bigger last month. Again, I think tariffs are reflected in that as well. The delayed effects of the tariffs and the tacos finally starting to be felt, and they will get here long before any of the benefits. And then we got some other big geopolitical stories. We've got South Korea's former Prime Minister Yoon Suk-yeol. Remember the guy who led the little coup last year? Well, he got life in prison. Prince Andrew got arrested for the Epstein files. What? Yep. A member of the UK royal family has been arrested for the Epstein files. By the way, that's the first time since like the 1300s or some ridiculous, the first time in centuries that a member of the royal family has been arrested. And I got to help you want to, you know, if a member of the UK royal family is going to get arrested, there was also two US presidents mentioned in the Epstein files, including the current one. Hey, it's got to be mentioned, doesn't it? Yeah, that story ain't going away, nor should it. And last but not least, we got more planes heading to the Middle East. A lot of men and material have been repositioned. A lot of money has been spent to put him there. I got to wonder, you know, like, oh, look, we got this whole big, like, sex abuse thing going on in the press. Here's a war in the Middle East. We have seen this play before. Oh, well. We got a lot to talk about today, guys. Why don't we shrink my big melon of a head and let's see what's going on in the world of finance. Don't forget that like button and that subscribe button for you new guys so you can come back tomorrow and have your coffee with the Melonheads, because we do this every single day. Right now, the S&P 500 is lower by 27 points, 0.4% to the downside for the S&P. The Dow is off by 180 points or 0.37% lower. And the NASDAQ is lower by 120 points, about a half a percent lower. Stocks are red across the board this morning. Looking over at the DXY, again, a stronger dollar. 3 days running now, double-digit gains for the Dixie. Currently 98.03, higher by another 28 basis points. All right, so is it a dead cat or are we looking at a sustainable move in the dollar higher here? We bottomed out around 96 a couple of days ago, and now here we are at 98, still well off the highs that we've seen in the last few years, though. In the bond market, we've got yields are a little bit higher, and, you know, I didn't even mention in the monologue, the Fed is talking about possibly hiking rates now. What? We'll get to that later in the show. But for now, the 30-year yield is at 4.724. That's higher by almost 2 basis points. The 10-year, 4.096, a point and a half. Higher, the two-year yield is at 3.474%. That's higher by about a point and a half. And the one-month is unchanged at 3.685. Actually, the one-month, two-month, three-month, four-month, all unchanged here. Interesting going on. Interesting happenings on the short end of the yield curve there. Looking over at the commodities market, metals are quiet, and that's the way I would like them to stay for a couple of weeks, please. Spot gold, $4,980. That's higher by about $3 here, 0.06% higher. April COMEX gold futures at 5,000. Even that's off by about $8 or $9, 0.17% lower. Spot silver is at 77.88. Silver had a good day yesterday, higher by another 70 cents today or 0.9%. Look at that, not even a percent move in spot silver. Good, good. I want to see that volatility taper off here. March silver futures are at 77.81. That's higher by 21 cents or a quarter of 1%. I like the shiny. Copper is down by about 1.6%. Platinum, 1.7% lower. Palladium, lower by almost 4% here. Still some volatility in the PGM metals. That's never going to go away. And crude oil is higher again this morning, $1.14 higher or 1.75%, $66.19 a barrel for April WTI crude. We're finally getting some higher oil prices due to the military buildup in the Middle East. The market is finally starting to take that seriously. We'll talk a little bit about that later on in the show. Looking over at Bitcoin, the sell-off continues here. $65,979, just below 66K, off by about another $440 from yesterday. Bitcoin not looking so good here. Watch that. What did we go down to? About 60,000 from 2 weeks ago. All right, let's talk about the big one this morning. Carvana falls as higher costs trim used car sellers' profit. And look, I don't know that that title's really accurate, the higher costs. Yeah, there were some higher costs, but I don't think that's really why Carvana stock is down. I think Carvana stock is down because that profit is a freaking illusion. It is a mirage, and you'll see some of these numbers here. Carvana suffered some growing pains in its push for rapid growth as the company's higher costs hit margins in its latest quarter and sent shares tumbling. And now I am going to have the theme song to Growing Pains stuck in my head for the duration of the day, thanks to some overachieving author at Bloomberg. Yeah, thank you, Mike Seaver, for that one. Moving on. It's not Growing Pains. It's, you misspelled fraud there. The online used car retailer said its adjusted earnings before interest, taxes, and depreciation and amortization were $511 million, lower than the analyst's average estimate of $536. A little bit of a miss on EBITDA. Again, though, I don't think that was the problem. Carvana has been growing quickly by buying cars, adding capacity to its vehicle reconditioning network, and acquiring new car dealerships. Those moves helped its used car sales rise at rapid levels consistent with recent quarters, but its margin fell a percentage point from a year ago. All right, now let's get to the meat and potatoes of this. Carvana continues to grow its business rapidly, posting a 43% jump in car sales in the period, about the same rate as the third quarter. So they are growing their top line very fast. Its gross profit per unit at the retail level was $3,076 per car, which fell by $255. That number's ridiculous, guys. That $3,076 per vehicle, even though it fell, that is way higher than anybody else in the industry is achieving. So is Carvana just better at selling cars than everybody else? Or maybe, just maybe, there's something else going on at this company. The company had signaled the drop late last year and attributed the decline in part to higher than expected reconditioning costs, which it expects to remain elevated in the current quarter. Now, this paragraph is powerful here. Net income, $951 million. But that was helped by a valuation allowance on tax-deferred assets. Without that impact and a loss from warrants and online issuer insurer Root Inc., net income was $333 million. All right, so take away the deferred tax assets and two-thirds of their earnings disappears, all right, an accounting gimmick. So of the $333 million in net income that you're left with, loan sales accounted for 95% of that profit, which means take away loan sales, and what are you left with? About $15 million in profit from vehicle sales. This is not a car retailer. This is a loan shop. That's the problem right there, guys. Their valuation, their stock movement, the price, the success of this company is dependent on issuing more and more loans. And how do you do that? When consumers are increasingly uncreditworthy, you do it by lowering your lending standards. And then how do you avoid the market finding out about those lower lending standards? I don't know. Hypothetically, what you might consider doing is hiding those losses on undisclosed third parties like DriveTime, like Bridgecrest, who services and buys the loans that Carvana issues. By the way, DriveTime and Bridgecrest are owned by the CEO's father, Ernie Garcia Sr. What? Yep. It's just this company is on borrowed time. And shout out to my friend Just Dario on X, by the way, who I think will prove to be strikingly accurate when he said Carvana will set the record for a company being included in the S&P 500 and then quickly filing Chapter 11. I think that is inevitable. In a letter to shareholders, Garcia said the company expects it will continue growing sales and EBITDA this year without giving specific guidance. Oh, no guidance? That's kind of a biggie too. Yeah. Our earnings are completely manufactured. Now look at this. This is what's crazy here. Look at the movement of this stock. It was down more than 20% yesterday. Now it's down 5.6%. What has changed since last night? The answer is nothing. It looks like shorts are covering right now. That's what looks like happens. This stock took a big dip. And all the short sellers, there was significant short interest in this name, which is one reason why I never shorted it, because I thought it was vulnerable to a short squeeze. And so you're seeing all these shorts are covering at a profit here because this stock has had a lousy couple of months. It's up 27% over the last year, but this stock has declined like 25% in the last few months. Then it took a big dip yesterday after earnings. Looks like the shorts are taking their profits and getting out here. Keep your eye on this one. Is Carvana going to close positive today? Gross, but they might. Meanwhile, we got Klarna posts a loss as credit provisions swell in line with growth. Another one, I've been warning about this one as well, buy now, pay later, that this is just nothing but rampant fraud and people borrowing money who have no intention of paying it back and companies hiding just how much money they're losing. Well, it looks like Klarna couldn't really hide it anymore. Klarna posted a pre-tax loss of $16 million in the fourth quarter as the firm set aside more money for potentially souring loans compared to a year ago. Provisions for loan losses came in at $250 million in the 3 months through December, up 59% from a year ago, according to a statement, but slightly below Bloomberg compiled average analyst estimates of $252 million. The company said provisions represented 0.65% of gross merchandise volume. There is no way defaults are actually that low at this name. The Stockholm-headquartered payments firm said it generated $1.08 billion of revenue for the 3 months through December, up 38% from a year ago. Gee, I wonder how much of that was helped by the fraud and the guys selling courses on how to commit freaking credit card fraud using their product, but I digress. That beat the $1.07 billion average estimate that the analysts in a Bloomberg survey were forecasting. So Klarna taking a lot of losses, and I am sure that Klarna glitch. And again, guys, if you want to, like, probably don't do this if your blood pressure is already high. Whatever you do, don't Google Klarna glitch and look at these people who, I kid you not, were selling courses on how to commit credit card fraud using Klarna. And the company did nothing to stop it. All they did was put out a statement that says fraud is illegal and we recommend you not do it. Not we could easily use our artificial intelligence algorithm platform to detect these scumbags and block them at point of sale. Oh, no, we can't. We're not going to do that. That would be, you know, not in our interest to do that. Instead, we'll just let them borrow all this money and then hopefully package all these garbage loans into asset-backed securities and sell them to unsuspecting investors before they go bad. Well, it looks like the music started to slow while they were still sitting on Klarna's books. Klarna stock down almost 18% ahead of the opening bell, $15.60 off by $3, $3.33 ahead of the opening bell. This one not doing so hot this morning. Another big one this morning, Blue Owl Capital halts redemptions for private credit fund. This should be a bigger story than it really is because this is the company that is now helping the hyperscalers use their what should be illegal accounting gimmicks in order to inflate their earnings, inflate NVIDIA sales while hiding how much debt they're taking on to do it. Blue Owl has announced a permanent halt on redemptions for its private credit fund, the Blue Owl Capital Corp. II, or OBDC2, which is aimed at retail investors. It's always retail that ends up holding the bag. The fund will now focus on providing liquidity to shareholders through quarterly returns of capital distributions. All right. So, yeah, you can't have your money back, but instead we're just going to pay you a share of the profits, of which there probably won't be any, which is why they're halting redemptions. Let's see. Rather than regular quarterly withdrawals, they're going to do these quarterly capital distributions. This move comes after a significant increase in redemption pressure with $150 million withdrawn in the first 9 months of 2025, marking a 20% year-over-year rise. Additionally, a $1.4 billion sale of credit assets includes $600 million from the retail fund, accounting for 30% of its total assets. So they just sold a huge portion of the assets in this fund. They sold what they could sell, what they could get anywhere near their marks for. What's left in the fund is garbage, and they're telling people nobody else is allowed to have their money back. Because if we give you your money back, we'll have to sell some of this remaining garbage, which we won't get anywhere near 98 cents on the dollar for. And so we're locking you guys in, but don't worry, we'll give you a share of all the profits going forward, assuming there actually are any. This is the same company that tried to merge this business development company with their other BDC a few months ago, telling investors they were going to take a 20% haircut in the profit process. They got sued, and so they canceled those plans. This is King Sleaze in the private credit space, and this is the same company that is helping the hyperscalers hide their debt from the public in order to keep these data centers building. And while we're talking about data centers, look, OpenAI funding on track to top $100 billion in the latest round. Look at all the money flowing into AI. Stop reading at just a headline and you'll think like things are going really well in the AI boom. And then, unfortunately, I can't do that. I keep reading, and I notice all these wishy-washy qualifying statements. OpenAI is close to finalizing the first phase of a new round that is likely to bring in more than $100 billion, according to people familiar with the matter who never want to be named. It would be a record-breaking financing deal that would give the startup additional capital to build out its AI tools. Of course, we have seen headlines about $100 billion investments in OpenAI before that ended up being fake and walked back later. As the ChatGPT maker prepares to spend trillions that they don't have in infrastructure investment, the overall valuation of the company, including eventual funding, could exceed $850 billion, according to some of the people, again, anonymously sourced. That's higher than the $830 billion initially expected. The company's pre-money value will remain $730 billion, said one person, all of whom asked not to be identified discussing private information. So it's almost like they have no idea what the valuation is going to be. The first portion of the funding round will largely come from strategic investors, round trippers, Amazon, SoftBank, NVIDIA, and Microsoft, the people said. If those companies invest near the highest ranges of what has been discussed, those commitments will near $100 billion. All right, so if these companies who have notoriously been walking back their statements recently about how much they're going to invest in OpenAI, if they all invest the highest number that has been floated, it might get you close to $100 billion. That is slightly different than the narrative painted in the headline, isn't it? Those companies are expected to finalize their allocations by the end of this month, some people said. The next phase of the deal, which will include venture capital firms, sovereign wealth funds, and other financial investors, is expected to close later and may bring the total fundraising amount substantially higher. You see, that's in reference to Sam Altman's recent trip to the Middle East that he came back empty-handed from. They're not mentioning that so far he hasn't had any money committed there. No, it could bring it even higher. The deal is not yet finalized, and the details could change, as they're prone to do. Representatives from all of these companies either refused to comment or didn't reply. In connection with the upcoming deal, Amazon is expected to invest up to $50 billion. SoftBank is set to invest as much as $30 billion. And NVIDIA has discussed putting in $20 billion, down from the $100 billion that they discussed putting in just a few months ago. The money from corporate investors is expected to come in several tranches or installments over the course of the current year, some of the people said. As part of its partnership with Amazon, OpenAI is expected to expand its use of Amazon chips and cloud computing services, said one of the people. All right, so interesting note here, OpenAI would have to use Amazon's chips in order to get the bulk of this funding. That's money that would not go to NVIDIA, it would go to Amazon instead. I'm sure a lot of this money is also going to come in the form of data center credits, which is when companies like Amazon and Microsoft give OpenAI a coupon for free data center rental in exchange for equity in the company. And then when the company redeems those coupons, Amazon and Microsoft reports it as revenue, even though it's not actually any money changing hands. It's imaginary money, play money. They're not even round-tripping real money anymore. They're round-tripping made-up play money, the AI funny money, data center credits. And then, of course, SoftBank, which has just become a total chop shop. SoftBank just sold everything that they could possibly sell in order to raise the $30 billion for OpenAI's last funding round. Where are they going to get the up to $30 billion more? That I don't know. Just magic. Somehow they're going to come up with it. Probably with loans from the government, which just spitballing here. Loans that the government has promised to provide as part of a trade deal with the Trump administration in exchange for lower tariffs. And so the government will provide a $30 billion loan to SoftBank, and then SoftBank will give that money to OpenAI so OpenAI can light it on fire so the government of Japan can get lower tariffs. This is one way that the Trump administration could possibly be using policy to keep the stock market bubble inflated. That's worth keeping an eye on. Also going on this morning, we got Walmart reports strong sales growth buoyed by grocery stocks. Good news for Walmart is not necessarily good news for the economy. U.S. quarterly comps rose 4.6, helped by a 27% gain in digital sales. The retailer reported strong sales growth in its latest quarter as it continued to attract more shoppers of all income groups to its groceries and speedy online delivery. Walmart also grew revenue from advertising, a small but fast-growing and profitable part of its business. U.S. comps, those from stores and digital channels operating for at least 12 months, grew 4.6% for the quarter ended January 30th, strengthened by market share gains, especially in upper-income households, the company said Thursday. That is interesting. Upper income households, rich people shopping at Walmart is not the good news we think it is. It really isn't. Online sales in the U.S. jumped 27%. Walmart is increasingly targeting Amazon with its business model. It is a sign that Walmart is on solid footing as the new CEO, John Furner, takes the helm. The retailer has clocked years of quarterly sales growth amid a changing consumer environment, with more buyers moving online and shoppers hunting for lower prices, especially for groceries. That's been the crux of Walmart's success, is their successful pivot to groceries. Earlier this month, the company's stock surpassed a $1 trillion valuation for the first time. Walmart also said consumers continue to spend cautiously, especially on non-grocery items. In the U.S., its largest business by revenue and profit. Profit margins grew thanks to grocery sales, membership through its Walmart Plus program, and advertising sales. But that growth was offset by slower sales growth in general merchandise, a dynamic that has persisted for several quarters. That's one reason why Target has had such a hard time, that general merchandise sales. Now, there's some interesting inflation data in here as well. In the U.S., prices for groceries grew less than 1% in the most recent quarter, while prices for general merchandise items rose 3.2%, a higher jump than the preceding quarter. All right, so groceries grew less than 1%, but general merch up 3.2%. You better believe tariffs are playing a role in that general merchandise price increases. And by the way, that 3.2%, they're not saying year over year. They're saying it grew in the most recent quarter. So there's some uncertainty. Is that a 3.2% year over year number for the quarter? Or did it grow 3.2% for the quarter, which would be significant year over year? And actually, that number would be pretty close to some of the advertised tariffs if you annualize it. Look, Walmart stock having a pretty good morning, up 2%. It was down initially on this news. And Walmart has had a really good year as well, up 22% over the last 12 months, trading at $129.14. Now, that tariff data and that general merchandise inflation, you can see it here this morning. We also got the United States balance of trade, or the trade deficit. It got a little bit bigger, negative $70.3 billion, all right? We imported $70 billion more than we exported, and this is goods and services. This is total balance of trade. All right, so a couple of things you're going to notice here, by the way. These are all negative numbers. So we now have two consecutive months of increases. November and December were both higher than October. All right, we saw in my interview with Craig Fuller I did a few weeks ago, he mentioned that there was a late surge in logistics activity late last fall before Christmas. You can see that reflected in these two monthly gains. More stuff came into the country. Why did more stuff come into the country? Probably because for several months, the trade deficit was shrinking because companies didn't want to pay the tariffs. A lot of those companies had increased their revenue. Look at these January, February, and March numbers, how deeply negative they were. That was companies scrambling to bring as much stuff into the country as they could before the tariffs hit. Then we have Liberation Day in April, and the trade balance got a lot smaller as companies sold down the inventory that they had crammed into the country. Now that inventory is largely exhausted, and so companies have no choice but to start reordering. And when they reorder, they're paying those tariffs. Maybe that's why Walmart saw that 3.2% increase in the fourth quarter. That is the inevitable result of restocking inventory and paying the tariffs to do that. Now, that means we could be just now starting to see the inflationary effects of tariffs. And we've been saying for years, ever since Liberation Day, we've been saying for months now, that the pain gets here first. First, the pain arrives. And then if we take our medicine, maybe eventually the benefits of the trade war would materialize in the form of reshored domestic manufacturing, which we haven't seen, by the way, because you still have the great big open question of the Supreme Court could strike down tariffs. By the way, we may hear about that on Friday, one way or another. We don't know what they're going to do. Also, the flip-flopping policy, the tacos and the on-again, off-again trade deals. If you're a company and you need to invest in domestic manufacturing, you have not got certainty from the government, so you're not going to make that investment until you're certain you have to. And so it's going to take a while for any of the benefits of this trade war to ever materialize. And by the way, Fed minutes reveal little appetite for rate cuts. You can see they're starting to be a little bit more worried about inflation in some of these Fed minutes. Some officials favored more neutral language, pushing back against the prospect of future cuts. We got the Fed minutes were released yesterday, and the Fed, there was a notable hawkish change in their tone in those Fed minutes. Federal Reserve officials signaled little appetite for reducing interest rates at their meeting last month, with most indicating they wanted to see further progress on inflation before considering any more cuts, a process that could take months. Several participants indicated that they would have supported two-sided description of the committee's future interest rate decisions, reflecting the possibility that upward adjustments in interest rates could be appropriate if inflation remains at above target levels. Oh my God, look at how unnecessarily long that sentence was. Let me translate. The Fed might raise rates. All right. Wow, that was a lot shorter. Not all uncertain upward adjustments, committee's two-sided description of future rate. No, they might be hiking rates soon. And everybody was talking about how many rate cuts are we going to get for the rest of the year. Yesterday's Fed minutes showed that the answer could be none. The answer could be negative. We might actually get rate increases now. And if tariffs start bringing CPI higher, then probably a very good chance we see that. That is worth keeping an eye on. All right, we got a couple of more guys we got to talk about here. Ousted Korean President Yoon gets life term over martial law bid. All right, we covered this story. This was very big news in the world for about 4 hours one morning last year when the South Korean president declared martial law after an election didn't go his way. Well, very quickly, that martial law declaration failed. Parliament restored order. That now ousted South Korean president has been sentenced to life in prison. All right, Sic Semper Tyrannis, good. That being said, the last time a former Korean president was sentenced to life in prison for attempting a coup, he was promptly pardoned. So there's very little chance this guy actually does prison time here. But at the very least, the guy was sentenced to life in prison over trying to steal the country. So there's that. And we've got King Charles' brother, a.k.a. Prince Andrew, has been arrested on suspicion of misconduct. You better believe this is Epstein-related. By the way, shout out to ABC News, who had the story about Prince Andrew and the Epstein story years ago, but they spiked the story. This was before Epstein was a household name. They spiked the story so that they could get the Will and Kate interview before the royal wedding. That is ABC News, owned by Disney, the world's largest child entertainment company. Let that sink in. But anyway, now that this story is broken and that the Epstein files have finally been released, King Charles' brother, a member of the royal family, has been arrested. It has been centuries since something like this happened. Now, again, he's been arrested. We don't know. He hasn't been charged with anything that we know of, just arrested on suspicion of misconduct. We don't know. All right. Is he going to serve time? Is there even going to be a trial? All we know is they arrested him. All right. And by the way, if they're going to arrest a member of the UK royal family, you better believe US presidents are on the menu if they're going to do this. The Epstein story is not going away, and nor should it. And last but not least, more planes in the Middle East here, guys. US gathers the most air power in the Middle East since the 2003 Iraq invasion. U.S. is ready to strike Iran, but President Trump hasn't yet decided to do so. Here's the reason, guys. One of the main reasons that I knew that Russia was going into Ukraine was because of the volume of men and material that they had put on the border with Ukraine. There was a lot of people were trying to say in the months leading up to the invasion that it was all just it's a stupid media narrative. Jack, I can't believe you're buying into this story. It's scare tactics. It's fake news. No, it wasn't fake news. It costs a ton of money to move hundreds of thousands of people, plus equipment, plus food and fuel and everything else that they need to put them in place. And there's no way that the Russians had spent that much money putting that much men and material in place if they didn't intend to use it. And that same logic is now starting to apply here. We've got two carrier strike groups, or at least one is already there. A second is heading there. Over the last few days, dozens of aerial refueling tankers, many squadrons of F-16s, F-15s, F-35s, F-22s, plus the naval aircraft, plus the refueling tankers, ground-based A-10s. There is a ton of military equipment has been moved to the Middle East, way more than we normally put there. We spent a lot of money to put it there. That doesn't mean you don't spend all that money unless you A, plan to use it, or B, you intend to get a lot in exchange for not using it. And so far, the Iranians have not offered a lot. The Iranians have basically offered to delay uranium enrichment by a couple of years. In other words, the Iranians offered the same deal that they gave Barack Obama, minus the pallets of cash. And President Trump is the one who took the U.S. out of that deal. So if President Trump accepts what the Iranians are offering right now, well, that would be immensely hypocritical of him, because it's the same deal that he took us out of. And it would also mean that he spent all that money, basically the equivalent of all the pallets of cash, just to put us right back where we were before all this started. I don't think he's going to do that, or I think it's unlikely that he does that, which means it is increasingly likely that we see bombs flying this weekend. And, you know, hey, you can't ignore the proximity. The last time there was a sex scandal involving a sitting U.S. president, stuff went kablooey in the Middle East, didn't it? And here it goes again. Don't rhyme. Or what is it? It doesn't repeat itself, but it often rhymes. It's funny. And I just want to say thank you so much to the Feral Grandma, who gifted 5 Nobody Special Finance memberships. Thank you, Feral Grandma, for gifting 5 memberships. Welcome to the Melonheads, you 5 baby melons. Be sure and say thank you to the Feral Grandma. And just a reminder, guys, use that free super chat that you get along with that membership, and I will read and respond to your questions, thoughts, concerns, comments live on the air. And we've got Possum Man saying, Jack is doing road work later today. That's right. Nothing says finance guy or road work ahead quite like this shirt. Yes, that's right. It's, what color is this shirt? Are we going to do that again? It's fluorescent Donald. The last time I wore this shirt, a football player dove past me for a first down. But yeah, thank you very much, Pasta Man. You know, when I put this one on this morning, I had a feeling somebody was going to have something to say about that. Mr. Four Piece gifted 5 Nobody Special Finance memberships. We're up to 10 baby melons this morning. Thank you very much, Four Piece, for supporting the channel. Same applies, guys. Say thank you to Feral Grandma and Mr. PP Poo Poo for supporting the channel and for gifting those memberships. Thank you very much, sir. Appreciate that. And we have got Full of Hope and Full of Twos. Full of Hope 2222 says he was stripped of title, arrested as a commoner. Okay, so now we're getting into the nitty-gritty of the finer points. Okay, he was a former prince. He was stripped of his title. So the formerly known as prince was arrested. So there's a prince joke in there somewhere, Purple Rain, something. I it's early yet. Okay, so he was arrested as a commoner. He's still the king's brother. He is. And well, let's just say I'm not a big fan of His Majesty the King either. I don't want to buy silver maples just because they have his face on it, to be honest with you. I know you shouldn't pay attention to what's on it. You should just stack for the weight. I got no problem with Queen Elizabeth being on the silver maples, but I don't want anything with Chuck's face on it. Anyway, thank you very much, Full of Hope 2222, for clarifying that he is no longer a prince. Nacho Man 3086 with 10 more baby melons this morning. Now we've got 20 new members. Thank you, Nacho Man. So I must amend my prior commentary. You now need to thank the Feral Grandma, Mr. Four Piece, and Nacho Man if you received one of those memberships. Thank you so much, Nacho Man, for everything you do for the channel. And Nacho Man is back again, says, be safe on the highway, Jack. Yes, this is a... It's Halloween passion. Yeah, trust me, ain't nobody running me over wearing this shirt, all right? Maybe I'm deer hunting, or maybe I'm directing traffic, or maybe I'm just marking the corner of the end zone this morning. All things apply. Who knows? Thank you very much, Nacho Man. I appreciate that. A lot of shirt commentary this week. That's interesting. Hey, everybody. Thank you for having your coffee with the Melon Heads this morning. Thank you very much for the super chats. Thank you also to you magnanimous Melon Heads on YouTube, Patreon, and Buy Me a Coffee. Thank you guys so much. Links down below. Should you feel so inclined, don't forget that like button. Don't forget that subscribe button right next to it if you're new. Hi, Mom. Hi, Dad. I love you guys. Everybody, till next time, live small and dream big.